It's another edition of Library Guys Go to the Movies. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Today we have with us Melissa, who is a children's librarian here at the Orange Branch, and she's going to be talking to us today about The Princess Bride.
The Princess Bride is probably a movie that I would assume most people have seen. It's definitely one that I remember seeing from my childhood. It was one of my dad's favorite movies, so I don't even remember when the first time I watched it was. It was just something that was always on because my dad rewatches movies. That is a big thing. It is definitely my mother's favorite trait of his, is that he watches movies all the time.
All the time.
All the time. And so it was just something that's like always been in my memory. I don't remember seeing it for the first time or having never seen it. But
it is one of those movies that you can really watch over and over again.
Yeah.
And it not get old, or you can kind of find new things about it, I think.
You can definitely, like, as a kid, you can watch it one way and really appreciate it. And then as an adult, you can watch it and still find things. Like, it's not like, oh, my son watches Thomas the Tank Engine day and night. And that does not have much for the adults. That is not something I appreciate.
Right.
But like The Princess Bride, I definitely feel like there's things for the whole family to watch there. And I think my favorite part of The Princess Bride, though, is like all the behind the scenes knowledge. Like, I feel like that always makes a movie so much more interesting. And so like one of my favorite books is called As You Wish. And it was written basically primarily as a memoir by the actor that played Wesley, Cary
Elwes.
I never
maybe?
Remember. There's just too many vowels or something in it. But everyone knows it's Cary. He's cool. And the audiobook of it's super cool because he reads it, but he gets all the other cast members to like read their memoirs interspersed. And so I actually rewatched the whole movie this morning because I was like, this is for work. This is important to do. And watching it, knowing various things, like Cary broke one of his toes during filming.
Right.
And so, yeah. So you're looking for those scenes being like, is this a broken toe scene? Does it look like he's hobbling here? And so I enjoy watching it for
looking for those things.
Yes, yes. Do I need to go through the plot of the story?
You can go through the basic plot if you want. I bet you most of our listeners have seen this movie. I know I watched it. It was one we watched in school a lot when
really?
I was in school back in the day, which was like 100 years ago. But it's one teachers like to show because it. Well, they like to show on those days when they kind of didn't want to teach and needed a break.
You got to love those movies. Yeah. So the basic idea of it is it's this book that this grandfather is reading to his son. And for some reason in my head, I always blank that part out. Like, I never remember this frame story that's around it. But I loved watching it this morning, seeing the old video game that he was playing at the very beginning. If anyone has any question what time period the modern part of the story is set in, I feel like that grounds it real quick.
To that era. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I believe that's Fred Savage is
yes!
the child. The guy who played Columbo is
grandfather.
Grandfather.
I think it's grandfather. The grandfather. Yes. Yeah, yeah. And he comes in. And he's reading the book, and the kid's like, "Oh, another kissing book." I feel like that's one of the great quotes. There's definitely a multitude of quotes that people hear from that movie and quote all the time. I read something where a guy had the famous "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You kill my father, prepare to die." He had it on his T-shirt. And he boarded a plane, and a woman who hadn't seen the movie absolutely lost her mind and was like, "He can't be on this plane," and they had to deplane.
Oh, wow.
And, like, the guy had to explain, like, "No, I'm not, I don't mean anything scary. It's just a movie quote." But yeah, a lot of the actors talk about how they get that quoted back to them all the time.
All the time, I'm sure, yeah.
So it starts off with that, and Wesley and Buttercup fall in love. They're working on the farm, which watching that as an adult, I'm like, where is everybody else? There's only the two of them on this farm. That part doesn't make sense, but still wonderful. Though I think the only thing that I really dislike about the movie is Buttercup's name. Everyone has normal names, and then Buttercup is a little weird. I don't know why she couldn't be like Jane or Susan. I'm not sure. I think Buttercup's strange, but we'll go with it. And they fall in love, and he goes off to find his fortune, and that's when his ship is attacked by the Dread Pirate Robert. Should I keep going with this part? Should we say something? I feel like I'm being boring now.
I could tell you that we could say Carrie Elwes, who plays Wesley, he was on the previous season of Stranger Things, to add a little factoid in there for you.
Oh, was he? I didn't even catch that.
He plays a totally different out of character baddie, I believe.
Yeah?
Kind of a sleazy business guy. I think I should rewatch that again, but it's been a while. So that's kind of, they like to bring back 80s, 90s cultural icons for all of us nerdy fans, I guess. This is based on a book, right?
Yes.
By
William Goldberg. So it was one of those that he sold the book rights multiple times and it just kept not getting made. And he just thought, like, this just isn't going to happen. This book's never going to be made a movie. And so it was really shocking. And he was very, very nervous because the book, he came up with the idea. He was going on a business trip and his daughters, yeah, two daughters. And one said, write me a story about a princess. And the other said, write me a story about a bride. And that's where the title came from. There actually is a sequel or an unfinished sequel. He tried to write a sequel, I think, called Buttercup's Baby. I'm not sure if he ever finished it. It definitely isn't a movie yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But apparently he was so nervous that the first day on set, they were filming the movie and they keep hearing this muttering like in the headphones. And they're like, wait, where's this sound coming from? Where is this muttering? And then like they said, cut, and the muttering stopped. And then they hit say, pull action. And the muttering was starting again. And finally they're like, no, we got to figure out what's going on. And it was the author, William Goldberg, was like hiding somewhere praying because he was so nervous. And the microphones were sensitive enough. It was catching his prayers that he was muttering during the filming.
Oh, wow. That I think is, even having an author on a movie set is usually unheard of, that they don't kind of like to have the writer there because they think they'll
Kicked out real fast too. One of the earliest scenes they filmed was the fire swamp where Buttercup's dress catches fire. For some reason he was not on set when they were like going over like, this is what's going to happen, here's where the fire's going to come out, doing like their safety check so that no one would actually catch on fire, just the like dress that was supposed to catch on fire would. And so he came back on set, they called action, she caught on fire, and he freaked out. He started screaming like, she's on fire, which obviously that was the point, she was supposed to be on fire. But they were like, maybe you should rethink where you are for the shooting of this movie. And so he went home. He didn't stay for any more of that.
That's probably better. I guess too, when it came out, it was not, it was really not well received. It when it first came out to theaters, it failed basically. But
yeah,
thanks to VHS DVD rentals, mm-hmm. it kind of became a cult classic. To me, I think one of the real appealing things about it is that it's a movie that appeals, if you're watching as a kid at least, it's a movie that appeals to both boys and girls.
Which was actually problematic for the marketing team. And part of why it failed was they were like, I don't know what's going on in this movie. Is it a romance? Is it an action movie? And so like the movie posters, the original movie poster was a silhouette of like the bed with the boy, Fred Savage, and his grandfather, and then sort of this like fantasy landscape in the background, but it really didn't communicate anything that the movie was about. I think I've read that the Italian movie poster even had like animals that weren't actually in the movie on the poster, a dragon or something, just like, oh, well, okay, sure. And so people just didn't know like what to do, what it was about. And that was part of why it initially struggled, but I think why it's now so enduring.
Let's, did you know, I feel like you're probably a little bit too young to kind of know Andre the Giant or who he even is or was before that movie. Did you have any idea about him being this wrestler who was...
No, before, like, all I knew of him until I started, like, deep diving just on my own was that he was just the giant in The Princess Bride. I had no idea he had this, like, long history, and he was apparently very, like, proud of his wrestling career, and anytime someone would comment, like, but, you know, wrestling is fake, right? He would get very serious and be like, no, it is not fake. It is real. And by some accounts, though, for him, for Andre, it probably was real, because a lot of people are like, oh, he's a giant, he doesn't feel pain like we do, and we've just like full-on hit him with chairs and just completely beat him up. And he actually had to have back surgery either right before or right after the filming of The Princess Bride, because people were just hitting him with chairs all the time.
right yeah, he took a lot of abuse. He has a disorder that causes growth hormone to keep producing, and that's why he became so large. So kind of with that disease, they always knew he eventually would pass away due to that. Mm-hmm. I knew him from his wrestling career, because really? As a kid I watched wrestling with my grandma a lot, and he was always somebody that, even though he was a bad guy, people liked him. Like,
yeah.
And I guess on the set, going back to his back problems, I guess he would ride around on the set on a four-wheeler.
Like, yeah, yeah.
A quad runner.
That's how Carrie broke his toe.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he ran over it?
He got on it, and he didn't realize how much torque the ATV had. And so, like, he started, and he, like, went over. The whole thing just, like, crashed, like, rolled over or something. And he ended up breaking his toe. And he tried to, like, convince the set doctor, just don't tell anybody. And he was like, I really feel like you need to go to the hospital, though. And he's like, I mean, they couldn't do anything for it, right? And she's like, well, I mean, with a broken toe, yeah, there's, you don't put a cast a lot of times on a foot for a broken toe. And he's like, so let's just not tell anybody. And so there's a scene where he's dressed as the Man in Black, and he's just rescued Buttercup. He's beaten, like, he beat Finnick and Vizzini, and him and Buttercup are alone up on the hill. And it's right before she pushes him down the hill. You can see him, like, sit down, and he does something real weird where he keeps his leg really straight the whole time he's, like, sitting down. And it's because he's got a broken toe, and he's trying not to bend it. And he had apparently, like, cut his boot open to try to fit his toe in, and because it was swelling, and it was all bad. And he had to come clean with the director, because the director figured it out. He's like, something's not on the up and up here.
I think he was, I think this was like a kind of a big movie role for him. And so he did not want to be fired from it right off the bat because of this injury. So he's kind of stuck with it, or tried to stick with it at least.
Yeah. Try to be a champ. He was a champ. Because he ended up, the big sword fight at the end was the last thing they were going to film of the whole movie. So, the fight scene. So there's this big duel, and they're saving it for the end so that they can train, like, through the whole movie shooting. They apparently were... Anytime people had a break, they were getting up and running through their sword fight scene so that they'd be ready. And so he was, of course, panicking, like, oh my gosh, I've got a broken toe. Like, you can't have the greatest sword fight in the history of the world with a broken toe. He managed, apparently.
He managed.
He got through.
You mentioned, like, a sequel maybe in the works in terms of the book, mm-hmm. or half finished. I hear just recently, I got a headline. I read just the headlines that Billy Crystal plays, forget his character,
Miracle Max
yeah. and with
Carol King. Other,
Carol King. They were, he was talking about or suggesting that they do a sequel or a spinoff just with those characters from the movie.
I would watch that. I would watch that all day long. They were big, I feel like, breakout characters in that. My husband and I will frequently quote the "Get back, witch. I'm not a witch. I'm your wife" at each other.
I That's love that. Awesome. That is awesome.
That is my favorite. And Carrie talks about in his book how he's supposed to be dead, like not breathing. And he kept just racking up laughing because Miracle Max was ad-libbing a lot of the scene. Like at the very beginning where they ask if he was the miracle man that used to work for the king. And he says like, "Oh, and the prince fired me." The part where he says, "Why don't you give me a paper cut and pour some lemon juice on it while you're at it," kind of thing. That was completely ad-libbed. And just a lot of it, the MLT mutton lettuce and tomato sandwich part, that was just like out of his head. I don't know how people can be that funny. Just
there's a lot of great, if you do get say the DVD and the Blu-ray mm-hmm. editions have outtake after outtake of them. So if you want a little more of that behind the scenes Billy Crystal off the cuff stuff is in the outtakes from that movie too. What else was eventful about The Princess Bride?
So the fight scene was big, and they spent the whole time practicing it. But because they practiced it so much, they got it down so smoothly. When they finally got to like filming this last massive scene, it just took like a couple of minutes. And apparently the director's comment once they finished it was, "That's it." They've been working for months, just like slaving, giving all their time. And so that's it was not really the reaction they were going
they
for.
Wanted. I'm sure it takes a lot of practice to do that ahead of time.
Yes. The guy that plays Inigo, his Mandy Patinka, apparently as soon as he found out he was supposed to be like this master swordsman, started taking fencing lessons just like right away. And so Carrie was really intimidated by the fact that he had not taken any fencing lessons, and Mandy seemed to be a bit ahead of the curve on it. And Mandy will even say that he is actually better with his left hand than his right hand, despite what his character portrays in the movie, because his sword fighting teacher made him start left-handed and he just really took to it left-handed. And so then when he had to switch to right-handed again, he, even though he is right-handed, he said it was way worse and that he really feels much more comfortable dueling left-handed.
I like that he was even before the movie was starting to practice.
Yeah.
A lot of these tidbits come from the As You Like It book for listeners, which
As You Wish.
Yeah.
We can put a link. I'm pretty sure we have that in our collection. And I know we have the audiobook available through our Libby app because that's how I listen to it.
I will. Yeah, I'll put a link in our description to the audiobook on Hoopla is what you said, or did you say?
Libby has the audiobook for sure. Libby. I think we've got the actual hard copy in our collection.
I would highly recommend the audiobook is great because it does have like a lot of the cast who was in it reads their own parts. Rob Reiner's in it. His dad is in it. Carl Reiner. Yes. Rob Reiner is the director of the film, I should say. And Carl Reiner is his dad. He's a movie or television producer.
There were some, there were a lot of takes that had to be done the first time. Well, not a lot, but more than I feel like they probably typically do on movies. I know of takes that were like the one and done kind of thing, such as when Wesley dives into the lightning sand after Buttercup, which she falls in when they're in the fire swamp. She falls into like the super fast quicksand and he dives headfirst in there. In the script, it instructed him to like hold his nose and just walk into it. And he was like, "That doesn't feel very heroic." I feel like there's it's too calm. Like your love just disappeared and you're going to hold your nose. Like that doesn't feel like something someone really
heroic would do.
Like the real Prince Charming would not necessarily do that. And so he was like, "I think I should dive into it." And everyone's worried because it was not created for an actor to dive headfirst into this sand trap because it was all this sand with a trap door that when you put pressure on the trap door, it would open, drop him through to a padded padded area beneath the stage. And so they called over the stunt double and was like, do you think, like, we just need to test this out. Could you dive into this? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure. And he dives in and he's like, yeah, it's great. But it's actually Carrie doing it on film. And so everyone was terrified. They were like, oh, my goodness, we can't replace our lead actor because it's very early on. The Fire Swamp was filmed right at the beginning. So everyone was panicking that, like, Carrie could very legitimately break his neck if he misses the trap door. No, I gotta do this. This is going to happen. And so he does it. It works. And they're like, okay, stop. Not going to try that again. Cut and print. We'll use that take. And then also where Wesley gets knocked out by a Count Rogan, the six-fingered man, he hits him over the head with the sword. The first couple of times they did it, you could see where the sword didn't connect to Wesley's head. And so they're like, guys, you gotta get closer. And so Harry says that he very, as all young people do, had a very high opinion of what he could withstand. And said, you know, just hit me a little bit. Like, just make contact. It'll be fine. That way I'll know when to drop. Because apparently he was pretending to go unconscious either too early or too late. And it just wasn't working. When the guy goes to hit him on the head with the sword, he does make contact and actually does knock him unconscious. So the scene you see on the movie is Carrie actually being knocked unconscious.
Being knocked unconscious.
And it's really short because everyone freaked out because they realized he was actually not still awake.
It looks very realistic in the movie.
It's so realistic.
It seems like Carrie Ellis really took one for the team here. It seems like he was abused, hurt. But he kept on going until the end of the film. I think weren't the locations really difficult too? They had to travel around to get certain location. It's been a while since I read the book by Carrie, but
yeah. When they're like traveling, when the three bandits, I can't remember if they had a name for their group, but the CD, Inigo and Fezzik have captured Buttercup and they're traveling. All those were done on location. And that's why Andre had that ATV, was because he couldn't fit in the vehicles that they were using to transport the cast to locations. They got him that giant ATV that Carrie broke his foot on. That's why he had it, was for all that traveling, because Andre has a history of not fitting in vehicles too. Apparently, as a kid, he didn't fit on the school bus. And so there was this famous Irish playwright who was living in this little French town where Andre grew up. And he was the only one around that had a convertible. And he found out Andre couldn't get to school because he couldn't fit in the bus. And so he actually drove Andre to school every day because he would just drive with the top down so that Andre's head could stick up and he could fit.
There's a couple of really great graphic novel biographies of Andre the Giant. If our listeners out there want to get a little more background or the story of Andre, I would really recommend those because they're excellent.
He had such a fascinating life.
He did. Yeah, really crazy. He was born, he speaks French.
Mm-hmm.
I forget where he was. I'm not sure it was actually France. Was it France or... It was a French-speaking country for sure.
It was at least, yeah. He at least was in a French-speaking town. And I guess it might not have been France. And I just assumed it was France because they talked about him speaking French. But I am not 100% sure where he was born.
I think on the set, I think the reason that Carrie broke his... Part of the reason that Carrie broke his leg, or the reason that he was even on the ATV to begin with, is that I think he became pretty good friends with Andre.
Yeah.
During the movie.
Yeah, they at the end of shooting, apparently he went out. Andre took him out to like bars, and because they would chat all the time on set, and that's how Carrie found out about him like riding in this convertible with an Irish playwright. And Carrie asked, "What did you talk about?" And he was like, "Oh, football mostly, with soccer there for us Americans." But they would apparently. They went out on the evenings to go get drinks and stuff. And Carrie said one night they were hopping from bar to bar because Andre only drank like really strong stuff. And so they wouldn't stay too long at a bar because it would tap out the bar. But Carrie noticed there was a guy following them. And apparently what had happened there was a policeman that every time Andre went out in this town, they would assign a policeman to follow him just to be there in case he was needed. Because one time Andre passed out on top of someone. And when you're a giant and you're completely unconscious on someone else, that someone else tends to get pretty distraught. And so like the cop was just there to keep an eye on things and help out if needed. And once Andre realized he was there, he apparently bought the cop a drink at every bar that they ended up at that night. That it was cool. Andre just seemed really chill with everybody. Like, he was just everybody's friend.
Yeah,
really a nice guy.
I guess he has a notoriously high tolerance for alcohol. Yes. his body weight obviously is good, is a factor there, but there are many stories out there about Andre's ability to
consume
quite a bit.
Also related, you mentioned like Andre speaking French. He wasn't super proficient in English and was really nervous about that, like having to read and learn lines. And so I think it was the directors that recorded all of his lines. Like, they just read all of his lines. And so he had a little cassette player.
Yeah.
And he would just listen and he learned, which blows my mind. I am not an auditory learner, so it would be completely impossible for me to do this. But he learned all of his lines by just listening to his cassette tape playing them.
Yeah, I remember that here, that in the book. Like, that's really interesting. Yeah, I think he carried it around all the time for every scene. Like, they recorded mm-hmm. it and then he would listen and then deliver the lines. Anything else we can say about The Princess Bride? How do you rank it in terms of your favorite movies? Is it one of your favorite movies?
Oh, for sure. It is definitely one of my favorite movies. I would probably put it at least in the top 25, if not the top 10.
Okay.
What about you? Do you remember when you first saw it? Was that one that you remember?
It may have been in school when I saw it, honestly. It may have been, I think they wheeled in the cart with a giant VCR on it, which at that time, I'm not even sure people had VCRs. It was just for institutions.
Right. man, how things have changed.
Right. Yeah, I can't pinpoint. It's not one where I can pinpoint the exact time when I saw it for the first time. But it was when I was younger. It wasn't at the theater, which makes sense since it kind of was.
It was a flop.
There for like a week, and then it was gone because it made no money initially. But I remember it watching it over and over again. And I normally don't like fantasy, but the combination in that movie just, for some reason, I still like that. Like, I still liked it, even though I'm not a fantasy mm-hmm. person generally. So I think that really goes to the way both the book and the movie were written and made.
Yeah.
Because when you say it appeals to both boys and girls, like it really does mm-hmm. do that to me, for me.
I feel like it's not so unbelievable because they focus so much on the characters. Like, even the more unbelievable things, like a giant, like Andre was a giant.
And that to me, yeah, that to me was the greatest, that was the kind of the best casting mm-hmm. for, they probably could have used some sort of special effects even back then to make a giant or practical effects to have.
Yeah, camera angles and whatnot.
But I think Rob Reiner specifically wanted to just cast Andre the Giant because... Yeah. He thought that was awesome, like a mm-hmm. real life giant. which that, you know, that's a really cool about it for that appeal. It has giants and it has, there's a comedy aspect to it, obviously.
Oh yeah.
There's sort of like a tongue in cheek, wink, wink to the audience even. And I used to forget about the framing device too at the beginning and then the end, but that too, I think is super interesting the way they did that in the book and in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would highly, if you have not seen The Princess Bride, you will probably like it. I would
recommend everyone try it.
It's one of those movies that it has an audience that I think it appeals to everyone. I mean, it's hard to not like that movie.
Yeah.
If you give it a chance to watch it in the first place, at least.
And like you said, like even if you don't like fantasy, like it's not like watching Lord of the Rings. It's
not
kind of story. There's definitely so much heart to it. Like you just really get invested in the characters. And Inigo Montoya is definitely like one of my favorite characters. And I think from what I've seen that his quote, "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father, prepare to die," is probably the most quoted line from the movie. And like, you should definitely read the As You Wish book because he talks a lot about like his connection. He had just lost his father kind of recently. And just like this deep connection that Mandy Patinka, the actor, formed with his character and how he felt like he was actually like, I don't know the word, like getting revenge off the idea of, because that cancer took his father, but he finally felt like he was able to beat cancer and through acting out that scene as Inigo, getting revenge, it really helped him like grow as a human. And there's so much to love about this movie.
There's so much. I think about it. There's a few movies where I will watch them and I will forget, as if I'm watching them on a second viewing, I will forget that this part was in this movie. Like I know it is, but then you'll forget because there's so much going on there. There's so much different things.
So many storylines. Yeah. Right?
And so, yeah, I think I would recommend it. Everyone should go see it probably right now. They should just go to the library.
Call us, put it on hold.
Yep. So thanks, Melissa. Thanks for joining us for the Library Guys podcast for the first of the new year.
Join us next time for Library Guys Go to the Movies. For more information on any of the films or digital services we've discussed, please visit DelawareLibrary.org.